welcome to this AHDB podcast for livestock farmers. We'd all like to know what the future holds. If Santa didn't bring you a crystal ball this Christmas to help you plan for the future, let me, in this podcast, introduce you to the next best thing. AHDB's Agri-Market Outlooks are a must-read, or in this case, a must-listen. Agri-Market Outlooks highlight the elements that will shape farming's fortunes over the next 12 to 18 months, as well as the longer-term policy and economic drivers. As a livestock farmer, in the next 20 minutes or so, you will hear about market dynamics and prospects for your sector, and in particular, the impacts of leaving the EU and the impacts of COVID on the economy. In short, AHDB's evidence and insight can help the industry plan, prepare, and budget for the challenges ahead. I'm John Bates, and I've got some great guests for you. But rather than going straight to an AHDB analyst, let's hear from Richard King. Richard is a partner and head of business research for Andersons. Hi, Richard. Thanks for sparing time to come on the podcast. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and Andersons, if you would.
Thank you, John. Yes, Andersons are farm business consultants. Effectively, we help our clients improve their business returns, improve their profitability, help them achieve their business objectives and their personal aspirations from what they're doing in terms of their farming. So just trying to give a helping hand to the sector, effectively.
And just tell us a little bit about your interest in the agri-market outlooks. Is that one of the tools in your toolbox to give a helping hand to farmers?
Yes, I mean, it's something that we sort of constantly say to our clients that you need a plan, effectively. How do you kind of get where you want to go if you haven't got a plan to get there? That's both sort of the long term, you know, where do you see yourself in 5-10 years time? But also a short-term one as well, and a big part of that is budgeting for the future. And to do that properly, you know, you've got to have a view, have some knowledge of what the market environment you're operating in, and therefore kind of an independent analysis by the likes of the AHDB, you know, an organisation without an axe to grind in any particular way, you know, is a useful source of data to feed into the plans that you are making for your business.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us. So 6 months ago, AHDB released its view on the future, and since then, a lot has changed. A trade deal has been secured with our European friends, but the country has gone back into COVID lockdown number 3, which is further denting the economy. So a question is, what's all that done to the previous agri-market outlooks? I'll ask an expert in a moment. Now let's just start with David Swales. Let's go to you first, if I may, David. We've got two other guests as well, but just remind us about your role with AHDB.
Yeah, hi John. So my role is the head of strategic insight. I work within the market intelligence division, and my team do a lot of work around understanding consumers and the demand side of the equation, which obviously we feed a lot of that into the outlook because it's an important thing we need to consider. And we've also done a lot of work around EU exit to understand what that might mean for our levy payers.
So just explain, why is this outlook work so valuable to levy payers?
Well, I think it's really important that levy payers understand the sort of environment that they're working in and what changes might happen and what risks and opportunities they may be able to take advantage of going forward. So the outlook really is key for us as a team because we try to give that forward picture. Rather than saying what's happened in the market or what's happening, we try to look forward 12 months to say this is how things will evolve. Here are some of the issues which are going to affect supply and demand and what might happen. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, there's an element of forward looking and it's difficult when you haven't got all the evidence necessarily. So we do try to outline, if we're making assumptions, we try to explain what those assumptions are. And then people who use our outlook can decide whether or not they agree with those assumptions and how much weight they want to put on our forecast.
Now, one of the big impact factors factors, presumably, is COVID. How important has that been as an impact factor this year?
Yeah, so, John, I mean, Duncan and Patty, they do an expert job at dealing with uncertainty. And there's obviously in the farming sector, we've got more uncertainty than most with things like the weather and dealing with production in natural systems. I think COVID is a new one into the mix. So we had to deal with it in the June outlook. We had to factor it in there. But obviously, there's still a great deal of uncertainty around how COVID might play out. And we do know from last year that COVID had a massive impact on people's shopping behaviours and the channels through which they consumed and purchased food. So, John, the most obvious example is we all ate out a lot less and we ate at home a lot more. John, it's not rocket science, but if you look at the types of products we bought in those different channels, they changed as well last year. So at AHDB, we've got loads of really good data on what consumers are doing, what products they purchase and when they purchase it. And doing the forecast this time around has been really, really good because we can look back at what happened in 2020 when we went into lockdown and when we came out. How did all those things move about? So what we've done this time around is we've kind of painted a picture of how we think COVID will play out. So we've made some assumptions that certainly by the second half of this year, we feel that the lockdown will have eased, lots of those restrictions would have eased, and people will be able to start going out and eating out again by the second half of the year. But in the first half, we've assumed that there will still be lots of restrictions in place. Do you know what I mean? Not least, we're in full lockdown at the minute, and that has a profound impact. So in the outlook, we explain what the scenario is, and then using that data from last year around how consumers' purchasing and the demand for food has changed, we can then apply that to our new forecast. And some of it's actually from a farming perspective, believe it or not, John, some of it's positive in terms of the demand for food. I mean, COVID's obviously a terrible thing, and I have to be careful saying that there's, I mean, some good points from it. But when we look at the total demand, although food service was hit, what we've tended to see for the red meat products is that the sort of rebound and the extra demand coming from the retail market has more than offset that loss in food service. So last year we had a 3% increase for both beef and lamb in terms of that total demand picture, and a 1% increase for pork. Now, this year, I don't think it's going to be quite so positive because we'll probably be in a more normal situation in the second half of the year. But Duncan and Patty will be able to explain a little bit about that demand side picture and how we think it's going to change going forward.
OK, just before I go to Duncan and Patty, then just tell me, has leaving the EU had a big impact?
Well, there's a lot on the news on that at the minute, John, and certainly there's lots of friction and customs issues which is affecting particularly our exports to the EU, because the UK government's taking a phased approach in terms of how we deal with imports, and the full set of rules aren't being applied yet. So, John, we're certainly aware of some of the challenges exporting companies are facing. Indeed, AHDB did some modelling around how Brexit would impact the sector back in 2017 and in 2019. I think if we were to summarise it all, we'd say that the issues are about trade friction. So there's extra requirements on the exporters, which adds cost to their system. What I would say is those costs are modest when you compare them with the costs of not having a deal. So I don't want to downplay this as an issue. And there is a cost issue here, which, I mean, if we're a net exporter, like for lamb, those costs may well flow down to farmers and have a modest impact on the price they receive. If we're a net importer, like beef and pork and dairy, the situation is the opposite. So the fact we're importing lots of goods and those goods are going to get slightly more expensive because of trade friction, that's actually a good news for our domestic producers.
OK, so let's just talk about trade projections a little bit. And in the introduction, I talked about crystal ball gazing. And have you been doing any of that?
Around the trade issues we have at the minute, John?
Yeah.
So we don't like to say crystal ball gazing. I think we call it foresight. But yeah, we certainly do a bit of that. So, John, and it's a difficult one to call. I think my observations on this is this trade deal was negotiated and put in place in about a year. Now, most trade deals between partners take many years, John, in some cases, 5, 6, 7 years to agree and implement. So the fact we do have some issues perhaps shouldn't be a surprise because it's been done so quickly. So I would expect a lot of these issues to be teething problems, which hopefully will get ironed out in the coming weeks and months. But as I said at the start, there's going to be an element of trade friction in the system forever now because we have left the customs union, we have left the single market. So, John, I mean, that's not to say the deal's bad. I think whatever type of trade deal was in place, there would be that sort of issue in the system. So the companies have got to try to work around these things, and hopefully government can help as well to minimise the impact that those things have.
And just a final question to you. Talk about the support and the assets that levy payers can access from AHDB.
Yeah, so in the area of demand, we have lots of information on our website. So, John, within the outlooks, we talk about how demand is expected to change by each sector. But, John, if you click behind the links, you'll get lots of information. We publish newsletters and articles and analysis, which explains what consumers are buying and how they're buying it. And then in areas such as trade and EU exit, we do have an excellent EU exit section on our website, which signposts people to resources and information and support. Perhaps a real key one with EU exit, which we've not touched on, is the decline in direct payments. So we know direct payments are going to be phased out over a 7-year period. That's a really big issue for the livestock sectors in particular. So you can get on our website. There's a business impact calculator tool which enables you to put in what your direct payments are, and you'll then get a picture of how they will change over the next 7 years.
Okay, David Swales, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for sparing your time. Let's go to Duncan Wyatt now. Duncan, welcome back to the podcast. What do you do for AHDB? Just remind the listeners.
Hello, John. Yeah, I work with Patty in the livestock group of our market specialists group in the market intelligence function. So we work closely with David as well. And we're kind of looking at what short-term and longer-term effects are affecting markets. My particular interest is in red meat, so beef, lamb and pork, and Patty's going to talk a little bit about dairy later on.
Okay, so your team are obviously the main authors for these agri-market outlooks. How are they compiled?
Right, so what we try and do is use the most up-to-date information that we have available to us, and that might be, for example, slaughtering data from DEFRA. It might be population data, which also comes from DEFRA as well in terms of the number of animals on the ground. Sometimes that can come from, for example, the British Cattle Movement Service too. And we kind of take a look at those numbers and we combine them with what we think is happening with trade, and we get that information from HMRC. And then we kind of talk to people in the industry, see what's going on, try and get a flavour of what the sentiment might be in terms of, for example, you know, are sheep farmers expanding their flocks? Are they retrenching a little bit? You know, what's going on what's the level of optimism, that kind of thing. We combine it all together and we try and draw on the data that does make a difference and try and filter out data that doesn't make a difference. So, for example, the number of sheep that go through store markets isn't particularly well correlated with final finished numbers. So we know not to pay too much attention to that, though, of course, it's interesting by itself. Add it all together, and then we try and lay it against the background of what we know from what David's been telling us around demand, and also what we think the political situation as well is in terms of, for example, single payments this time around. And with all of those things together, we try and balance the market really in terms of production, imports, exports, and demand.
I mean, in the last 6 months, there's been a lot of shifting sand, hasn't there? David sort of described about a couple of the big impact factors, obviously, leaving the EU, the outcomes of COVID, which is ongoing and having a dramatic impact on the economy. So have there been any other big surprises as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I mean, David's touched on that already. The big ones, obviously, earlier in the year were coronavirus, where for let's take beef, for example. Consumers went out straight away and bought lots of mince, and that had a real effect on the carcass balance and therefore the value of cattle. You know, the industry kind of got together and addressed that problem, and we're kind of through that now. But what you can't get away from is the fact that, you know, and again, David mentioned it, where demand has essentially moved into retail. And certainly for cattle, for example, retail is really, really supportive of, generally speaking, British cattle. And so that's partly why the price of British cattle has gone up so much over the last sort of several months. So one thing we're kind of trying to look out for is, A, what do we think production is going to be for those cattle? And we know that there are fewer numbers on the ground this time compared to last year. And there were actually at the beginning of last year. And in fact, at the beginning of last year, we were actually expecting beef production to be lower year on year, but it wasn't. Higher prices drew out more cattle and actually drew cattle forward as well. So they were being slaughtered at slightly younger ages towards the end of the year. And so we expect that shortage of cattle to feed through into this year instead. And so we're forecasting a 5% decline in both slaughterings and beef production, prime slaughterings and beef production this year as well. The market will need to balance. And David's already mentioned that we think demand is going to be a little bit lower too. So what we think is our exports are going to be slightly lower, both because our production is lower on beef, but also because there's going to be some trade friction and volumes are going to be lower certainly at the beginning of the year. But also because the market needs to balance and demand's probably going to go down by, say, 3% this year, we probably need to import a little bit more, probably Irish beef. And so our imports are going to be slightly higher, we think, to countermand the fact that we've got lower domestic production as well. So that's kind of the beef situation. And the thing to be careful about there is, of course, that, you know, if our kind of basic assumptions of food service opening up in the latter part of the year come to pass, what we'll see is that demand will move out of retail and back in towards food service. And we know that food service is kind of fertile ground for relatively competitively priced imports. And so when that demand moves away from essentially potentially British cattle and in towards possibly more imported beef, then that's the time when we might see a little bit less support for that cattle price. And that's something to be mindful of as we travel forwards.
Now, these outlooks are builders helping the industry cut through current uncertainty. So what are the highlights in the outlooks for you?
So really for us, it's kind of that movement from not knowing what Brexit was going to hold to now knowing what did happen. So David's mentioned it already. You know, we can't underestimate the importance of trade friction in terms of costs and difficulties that the market needs to overcome in the short term. But, you know, let's take lamb for a moment then, and we'll say, well, actually, you know, lamb was due to potentially have some quite punitive tariffs put on it. And in the position where we're a net exporter of lamb, that means that, you know, it would be reasonable to assume that that would be quite weighty when it comes to an effect on the lamb price. And the industry has kind of, that's not now come to pass. And of course, we're just dealing with short-term trade friction at the moment. So we're in this kind of interim period where some uncertainty has gone away. We know that the tariffs are not going to be imposed on lamb trade. And we know that UK lamb can still be exported to the continent without a tariff placed on it. But we also know, as David's already mentioned, that single payments are going to go away and be phased out over the coming years as well. And so what that means is now is a kind of a good time for a lot of farm business to go away, look at their numbers and see which part of their enterprises are making money, which could do better, how they can manage their costs a little bit more closely. And AHB has some tools to help them do that and manage their production accordingly and manage their income accordingly. At the moment, the sheep meat price is quite high. The global market is relatively tight. We know that New Zealand is probably going to have slightly less volume to export. And so that's feeding in quite well. And there's good demand for lamb in Europe at the moment, particularly in France as well. Although, you know, again, it's not just the UK that has coronavirus. The food service market across the whole of Europe is affected. And so we're expecting UK production of lamb to be a little bit lower this year. And we're also expecting our exports probably to be a little bit lower, but we're also expecting our imports to be lower too. because of that smaller amount of New Zealand volume available. So again, you know, we need to be mindful of that UK demand for UK lamb supporting the price. And as we get more involved in becoming this net exporter, that potentially could weigh on the price a little bit too.
So you've given us some insight and some projections. Is your crystal ball telling you anything else?
The crystal ball is telling me, if you don't mind, if we move on to pork a little bit, the crystal ball is telling me that where we've got production declining in beef and lamb, we're expecting pork production to grow. You know, we've had a stable breeding herd. We think productivity is going to increase as well. And what we've also seen at the latter part of last year, we've had some difficulties in slaughtering that number of pigs. And so we've got a carryover, and that's going to bring more pigs into this year as well, in addition to an increase of production by itself. So what that means is, you know, that extra pork that we're going to be produce, unfortunately, is also being produced into a European market, which itself is very, very well supplied with pork. And so, unfortunately, it looks as if pig farmers are going to be particularly squeezed in terms of a lower pork price. But also, you know, we all know that inputs are going up and getting more expensive too. And so, unfortunately, for pig farmers, it looks as if we've got some really, really challenging months ahead with a lower price for their outputs, but they're going to be paying more for feed and potentially more for other inputs too. And so, yeah, we expect pork trade to contract. David's already mentioned we expect demand to be down a little bit, but with that increased production, I think, unfortunately, it looks as if the pork price is going to come under pressure for some time yet.
Okay, Duncan Wyatt, thank you very much indeed for that.
Thank you, John.
My final guest in this podcast is Patty Clayton. Hi, Patty. Thanks for sparing the time. Which bit of the AHDB ship is yours?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. I cover, like Duncan, I'm in the market specialist team in market intelligence, but I focus on dairy. So I'm the lead analyst in the dairy team. And as with Duncan, I basically, my job is to keep an eye on market events, what's happening with production, with consumption, with trade, not just here, but around the world, and see how that affects dairy market prices and ultimately dairy farming incomes.
And so why do you believe that dairy farmers should be paying attention to this outlook information?
Well, as is the case across all the sectors, really, John, the year ahead, 2021, is going to bring some big changes to how we trade, who we trade with. Yes, we still have a deal with Europe, with the associated, you know, costs that trading with them will, you know, bring with it now that we're out of the customs union. But we're also forging new trade agreements across the globe. And so that trade environment's going to change. That's just one thing that will shift how markets behave. On top of that, we also have the effect of this, I suppose, change in where people are buying dairy and what sorts of dairy they're buying, because dairy is a complicated market. There's a lot of different products that we make with the milk that comes off farms. And the interaction of those different markets has an impact on price. The COVID situation has not just changed where people consume product, but also what they're consuming. So we've seen, when we saw that big shift with the lockdowns in the last year, we've seen the resurgence of home baking. So when the kids are at home and the parents need to keep them busy, we've seen, you know, a lot more home baking, and that has an impact on butter, for example. So we've seen butter sales go, you know, be very, very strong in the last year. With cheese as well, it's being used more with home cooking. So again, it's benefited from this shift in consumption that COVID's brought along. But for those dairy farmers, you know, most dairy farmers will remember the issues we had last spring. Liquid milk is a slightly different thing. It's not storable, it's perishable. And when the food service market was closed down last spring, that had a significant impact on how the markets reacted. So again, we aren't through that yet. We have a lot of uncertainty on how demand for dairy products will move this year, because we still don't really know how coronavirus will play out, when food service will open, and how quickly it will recover. Our outlook this year is obviously going to be based on the scenarios that we think are the most, I suppose, reasonable, as decided by our experts on the consumer side. But there's assumptions there. And so it's important to have a look at that and maybe keep monitoring it, so that, because things will change, and as they flux, it does affect the dairy markets quite a bit.
So, Patty, is it a naive thought to think that because most of the milk produced by British cows is consumed here, are dairy farmers at less risk of adverse impact over other livestock farmers?
Well, dairy farmers are at no less risk to market shocks and market movements than any other farmer. Yes, a lot of our milk goes into product that's consumed in the home market, but we export. We export some really high-valued cheddar. We also import a lot of product, and those interactions keep our market, you know, our market has to adjust to what's going on globally. So yes, while most of the product stays here, we're still very much impacted by what's going on globally.
Now, I asked the others about their crystal ball gazing. Patty, what's the crystal ball on your desk telling you?
Oh, if only I had one, John, if only I had one. In any case, we've done some work on forecasting production. We do run a forecasting forum twice a year. We bring in a lot of expert opinion from the industry. And at the moment, our current forecast for 2021 is that we're going to see only a small increase in milk production across the year, about 0.5%, which means that we should, in total in the year, produce about 12.6 billion litres of milk. Now, that's not very much more than what we produced last year. And one of the big assumptions underlying this is most of that growth will happen in the first year, because we don't expect to see the big reductions in milk production over the spring that happened last year, where farmers were actively encouraged to reduce their yields. So we expect yields to maintain where they are. We've got a slightly smaller dairy herd. It's been declining over the last few years. And so while our yields are still up, we shouldn't see much improvement in the last half of the year, but we should gain a little bit in the first half because of that. We won't have to reduce production in the spring. Now, that's an assumption based on this expectation that we won't see another lockdown like we did last year, and that we won't see farmers having to reduce production actively like they did last year. That, of course, is contingent on our processing capacity and our capability to process all the milk coming off farms. With food service sectors really big consumers of fresh milk, as long as that sector does start to open up, you know, in the second quarter and gradually opens up as we move into our peak production period, we should be okay in terms of being able to process all the milk coming off the farm. But the less liquid milk that's consumed as liquid milk in the market, the more demands there are on our processing capacity, and the tighter that situation becomes. So that is a risk to our markets. And should that occur, we will see some pressure on pricing, because we will have some milk that just won't have a home and will need to be perhaps sold at slightly lower values. The other risk to that in the spring period, in any case, is again our coronavirus infection rates. So if we have a lot of absenteeism, processing lines shut down, that could also impact the market in that period of the year. So that's just a tight part of the year that we have a few sort of watch points for. Given that, and assuming that we get through that with, you know, relatively unscathed, which is the hope, trade should actually start to improve again. We now have the deal with the EU, so we should expect to see pretty similar levels of trade in terms of dairy products with the EU. we did see quite a reduction in trade last year. I think our exports were down by about 11% and imports were down 7%. And that was a direct, I suppose, consequence of food service closing down. I think Duncan mentioned that the food service sector is a much more competitive sector when it comes to pricing, and it does tend to pull in lower valued imported products and keep those prices quite competitive. With the food sector demand much lower, our retail sector tends to prefer domestically produced Red Tractor certified products, and so demand for domestic product was much higher. We expect trade will open up a little bit more this year as food service grows, and also now that the uncertainties around Brexit have gone. So overall, I suppose the crystal ball says there should be the market should stay relatively stable. Even on a global level, production isn't expected to grow significantly. And depending on the success of vaccine rollouts, we should see that import demand starting to recover as well, which should help to pull in that extra milk. So a relatively stable outlook, I would say.
Patty, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your fascinating insight. AHDB want your feedback, please. So please use the link in the show notes to share any thoughts that you have about this podcast or any ideas for future episodes. Thank you to my guests, Richard King, Duncan Wyatt, David Swales, and of course, Patty Clayton. Thanks also to podcast producer Aisha Shabman. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.